This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Here's the rough sequence of events. WikiLeaks dumps a whole bunch of hacked emails from Clinton servers that include Clinton staffer John Podesta emails containing the texts of speeches Hillary Clinton gave to some multinational banks. And shortly thereafter, the government of Ecuador announced that it has cut off Julian Assange's access to the Internet from their London embassy, where Assange has been staying for years. Ecuador issued this statement, quote, "Ecuador respects the principle of non-intervention in the internal affairs of other states. But the cat was out of the bag. Listen to this question from last night's debate that came from those leaks and was asked by host Chris Wallace.
In a speech you gave to a Brazilian bank for which you were paid $225,000, we've learned from the WikiLeaks that you said this, and I want to quote, "My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders." So that's
Thank
the
you.
Question.
So, does that sequence of events suggest U.S. pressure and further that Russia is attempting to manipulate this U.S. election? David Sanger, who's been reporting the story for The New York Times, says it's a definite maybe.
The question is, was there U.S. pressure on Ecuador to cut off Assange, or did the Ecuadorians just come to the conclusion by themselves that they were becoming a witting or unwitting player in this cyber war that is taking place between the Russians and the United States, in which the Russians, if you believe U.S. intelligence, is attempting to influence the election?
I would imagine that cutting off the Wi-Fi for someone like Julian Assange, already living in an embassy, which would be fairly humble accommodations just right off the top, would be akin to, you know, taking away his oxygen or something.
It would be, but you have to wonder how fully effective that is. I mean, you know, you can travel around the world now with a small portable Wi-Fi hotspot, and you've got to think that Julian Assange has enough friends in London that somebody would be slipping him one. And remember, the WikiLeaks servers are not sitting in that Ecuadorian embassy in central London. They're spread out around the world. Now, if the NSA wanted to, it could shut those down. But that raises all kinds of First Amendment issues, particularly if any of the users of that system are American citizens or any of them run through American infrastructure. And it's good bet good number of them do.
What are sources in the security establishment more concerned about, the infrastructure of WikiLeaks or the apparent Russian infrastructure to feed WikiLeaks this kind of information?
Oh, it's not even close. They're far more interested in Russia than they are in WikiLeaks. In this case, WikiLeaks is just the conduit for getting this stuff out. And you may remember that back earlier this year, the first stolen material wasn't posted by WikiLeaks at all. It was posted by a group or an individual called himself Guccifer 2.0. Now, U.S. intelligence thinks that's probably just a front for Russian intelligence. But the problem was that when they posted this on Guccifer 2.0, no one paid attention. So it wasn't until the same data was funneled off to WikiLeaks, which has got a fairly big base of followers, that it began to have some impact.
So Julian Assange is kind of like the Ellen DeGeneres of illicit data from servers in cyberspace. And his celebrity status is what drives the story. In that case, they're only adding to his celebrity by shutting off his Wi-Fi.
Yes, they are trying to find an outlet that's got a big instantaneous following. And that certainly would be WikiLeaks. We don't know how much day-to-day role Mr. Assange plays in all of this. Certainly, he has a very smart person, and he set things up so that if he was ever cut off, which he knew he was vulnerable to, the system could keep working without him.
David Sanger, national security correspondent for The New York Times, who keeps working no matter what happens in the world. Thanks, David.
Thanks, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.